We're holding in Yerushalmi Shkolim, page 12, Os Tesvon. Since the Mishnah had listed the various prominent people who served in various roles in the Bais HaMikdash, as we learned yesterday, so therefore now the Gemara digresses. It's actually in the Yerushalmi. It's out of order. It has this and the next few pieces first, and then the parts analyzing the various officials, like we learned yesterday at Psachya and Mechunya and so forth afterwards, but here in Ein Yaakov, it has it in the opposite order. Anyway, so now it's going to talk about another great figure in Jewish history, a very seminal figure, in fact, Rabbi Akiva. And in fact, it's very much Hashgacha Pratis because today, actually, Hey Tishrei, it's brought at the end of Megillas Tainis that today, Hey Tishrei, is the day that Rabbi Akiva was arrested. So now, Amar Rabbi Yonah, Ksiv, the Pasuk says, in Yeshaya, Lochain, therefore Hashem says, there's been a whole perek describing a servant of Hashem who suffers terrible Yisurim. Therefore, Achalak loy barabim, I will divide for him a portion among the many, ve'esatzumim yichalak sholol, and together with the mighty ones, he'll divide the spoils. So Zeh Rabbi Akiva. So this pasuk is referring to Rabbi Akiva. So now, before we get into how what makes us say it refers to Rabbi Akiva, so HaKosev has a long explanation over here. First of all, he points out this is the end of Yeshaya Perek Nun Gimel, the famous Perek that the Christians are always using to claim that it refers to their guy. So therefore, so HaKosev says that may be one reason why Rabbi Yonah finds it necessary to douche in the pasuk over here. Absolutely not. It doesn't refer to that fellow. It refers rather Lahavdil to Rabbi Akiva. And in what sense? Now, Mefoshim on the Psukim explain that in the whole Perek is speaking of an Eved Hashem who suffers all kinds of terrible Yisurim, and everybody thinks that he's a no good Nick and everything. And then in the end, Hashem shows he's vindicated and he gets his reward. So Mefoshim on the Psukim explain that it refers collectively to the Jewish people. The Goyim throughout history have thought that we're nobodies, and we're worth mentioning that today, especially the anniversary of the attacks in Eretz Yisrael. So, but eventually, they're going to realize that Fakert, everything that we went through in Golos was really it was for our benefit, and it was as much for our benefit as for theirs. That we took on ourselves the Yisur, we accepted on ourselves the Yisurim and whatnot that should have been right by rights on them. Anyway, but here the Gemara is darshining around an individual. The Zohar also explains, and it's brought in various places in Chassidus, that it refers to Mashiach. Anyway, so in what sense does it refer to Rabbi Akiva? So first of all, obviously he did suffer terrible Yisurim in jail, and then eventually he was killed by the Romans. And HaKosev points out how there are various things in the Psukim before that also can be seen to refer to Rabbi Akiva. For example, a couple of Psukim before, or later on in the same Pasuk, the Gemara is only bringing over here the first half of the Pasuk. The second half of the Pasuk is Tachas Asher Hera Lamavis Nafshe, because he exposed his soul to death. Ves Pushim Nimna, and he was counted together with the Rishoyim, together with the rebellious ones. Vuhuchet Rabim Nasa, and then the pasuk finishes off. He bore on himself the chatoyim of the many, v'la Pushim Yafgia, and he even davened on behalf of the sinners. So Asher Hera L'mavis Nafshei certainly tells us that it's talking about Rabbi Akiva, who's an ultimate example of Mesiras Nefesh. In fact, Tiklan Chavetin, one of the standard Mefoshim on the Yerushalmi Shkolim, explains that we find that Rabbi Akiva in particular, we know that throughout his life, he was always saying, Mosai over the Midazu, when am I going to be able to accomplish this Midah of Mesiras Nefesh? And there's various other details in it. He points out also that the Es Poshim Nimna can refer to the fact we find in the Gemara in Brachas, when it tells the whole story of how Rabbi Akiva is teaching Torah in public, that Papus Ben Yehuda confronts him and says, "How could you do that? It's dangerous." And Rabbi Akiva says it doesn't matter, and he tells him the mashal of the fish and the fox. And eventually, what happens? Rabbi Akiva is clapped in jail, and shortly afterwards, Papus is brought there as well. So in that sense, and Papu says to him, I was arrested for Dvorim B'Telem, unlike you, Ashrecha, how fortunate you are that you were arrested for Divrei Torah. So in that sense, then Rabbi Akiva can be called as Poshim Nimne. He's together in jail, together with a Poshea, like Papus Ben Yehuda. On the other hand, Yafei Mara at the bottom of the page over here says that it's hard to say that. We do find in other places that Papus himself was a Talmid Chacham and a Chaver of Rabbi Akiva. How can we call him a Poshea? What it means is the Goyim considered Rabbi Akiva a Pesheya. He's violating their laws. Anyway, So there's a lot of other details in it as well. Hakosiv learns when it says that he's going to get a portion among the rabbim. That means because he taught rabbim, he taught many people Torah. He had, in fact, as we know, he had 24,000 talmidim, and then they passed away, and then he had 5 more talmidim, and through them the whole Torah was reestablished for future generations. Vesatsumim, and when it says that with the mighty ones, Yechalik Sholol, so who are the Atsumim? So again, it can mean, so again, Hakosiv says it can mean the Talmid Chachamim in general, who are mighty in learning Torah. Tiklan Chadatin gives another explanation that the Atsumim refers to another group of Haruge Malchus of that time, namely the famous Haruge Lud. The Gemara tells us the story in a couple of places that at one point the emperor's daughter was found dead, and the emperor wanted to accuse all the Jews of the crime and chas v'shalom, wipe them all out for it. And 2 brothers named Papus and Lulianus came forward and confessed it in order to spare the rest of the Jewish people. And they were, the Gemara actually seems to say that they weren't killed in the end, but from other sources it seems they were. In any case, they're called Haruge Lud, and the Gemara says in a few places about them that nobody else can even stand in their mechitza. They have a unique place in Gan Eden because of that Mesiras Nefesh of theirs. So now we're saying Rabbi Akiva, though, is at least of that caliber, if not more, and therefore Vesatsumim, with those mighty ones, Papus and Lulianus, those Haruge Lud, Yechalik Sholol, he gets to divide the spoils. What spoils, in particular, Tiklan Chadatin points out, a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that says that another pasuk in Yeshaya says that for everything that the goyim stole from the Jewish people throughout all the generations, Hashem is going to make them pay back something even more valuable. Tachas anachoshes ovizahav, v'sachas abarz okesef, etc. And then the Gemara says, what can they give in return for having killed Rabbi Akiva and the other asura Rugim Malchus? And the answer is they can't. There's no treasure more precious than them. So therefore, that's the shalal, the spoils that we're going to get from the goyim, l'osid lover, that they're going to pay back for everything that they stole from us. Rabbi Akiva is going to have his portion with that sholol because, as we're saying, he's irreplaceable, unlike all those treasures. So therefore, in various ways, this pasuk refers to Rabbi Akiva.
Those two brothers admitted to killing.
So they admitted to the killing, and they're
Is it necessary for both, or they implicated each other?
Maybe they implicated each other. I don't know. The Gemara doesn't say. It just says they came forward. The way the Gemara tells the story in Tainus, actually, is they weren't killed in the end, is that the emperor or the emperor's the emperor's representative or whatever tells them, I know what's going on. You're trying to pretend like you're going to be like Hanani Mishal Vazalia, and you expect Hashem is going to save you B'derech Nes, and they tell him nothing of the sort. They were tzaddikim. We're not such tzaddikim. Nebuchadnezzar was a deserving king. He recognized the Eibishter's greatness after the whole story. You're not going to. Anyway, then in the end, the Gemara says that two delegates came from Rome and killed this Turionus, who was going to kill them. So it seems mashma from the Gemara that they weren't killed, but there's other Midrashim that tell the story and say that they were. The point is that in various ways, this Pasuk, Lachen al Chalak Leibarabim, is referring to Rabbi Akiva. Shehiskin mikra umidrash v'halochas v'hagodis. He set up for us the mikra, meaning, of course, mikra is long before him, but he taught us the Torah Shabbat Peh of the mikra, how to darshan it with the Yud Gimel Midas. I mean, all of this goes back, of course, long before Rabbi Akiva. It's ultimately Alach L'Moshe Mesinai, but Rabbi Akiva is the one who made a seder in it. In particular, we have the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us Stam Mishnah is according to the Meir, Stam Sifra is according to the Yehuda, Stam Tesefta, I think, is according to the Yehuda, Stam Sifra, Stam Sifri, etc. Each one is based on what one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim taught, V'chulu Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, from Rabbi Akiva, is basically through him, we have the entire Torah Shebaal Peh, because he's the one who learned all of it and then taught it to his second group of Talmidim, his 5 Talmidim, and that way it was preserved for all time. So he set it up in the sense that he made a seder in it, which there wasn't necessarily until that time. So that's mikro, midrash, and the midrashim of how to darshan the psukim, v'halochas v'hagodis, and the halochas and the hagodis. In other words, again, not that he invented all of them, chas v'shalom, but rather that he made them a seder that we could all then taught them to his talmidim in a way that now comes down to future generations, and we're able to learn it. So that's the halochen achalak leberabim, because he taught the rabim Torah through these different methods that he did of systematizing what's in the Torah. Now, the yesh omrim, others say, though, no, Elo Anshek Nes Sagdoila. Yesh Omim, that no, these things are from the Anshek Nes Sagdoila. Now, what does that mean? Hakosev explains that there's the one way of explaining the Yesh Omer, I'm going to say, as great as Rabbi Akiva was, you can't say that he's the one who's referred to in this exalted pasuk, talking about how Hashem is going to vindicate him in front of everybody's eyes and show that he was the representative of the entire Jewish people. So they say that kind of greatness you have to attribute to the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So that then he says that it's actually not so much we can say the lachen ochalak leber rabim, the fact that Hashem is saying I'm going to give him a great reward, yes, that can refer to Rabbi Akiva specifically. But the part about mikra midrash halachas va'agadis, it's hard to attribute that to one individual person, even Rabbi Akiva, as great as he was. Rather, those we have to attribute to the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So they're the ones who arranged the details that we're saying over here. In particular, it's brought in various places that there were long before. We know that Rebbe compiled the Mishnah as we have it, but we find various things where we find in various places where there were Mishnayos arranged much as they are now long before Rebbe. There are many proofs of that. For example, we have the Mishnah at the beginning of Psachim that mentions that that says V'loma omru shtei shuras b'martif. Why did the earlier Chachamim say that you have to check two rows for chametz in a wine cellar, and then Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue which two rows? So you see that long before Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, there was already a form of the Mishnah that mentioned the words shtei shuras b'martif, and already Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are arguing what it's about. There's various other proofs. So one explanation is that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah set up the original version of Mishnayos, and then over time that was added to and relearned and retaught in different ways, and eventually it became the core of the Mishnayos that we have now. So then that's the Yesh Omrim over here, that they set up the Mikra Midrash Halachos V'Haggadis, they set up the basics of how to learn those. They took what Moshe Rabbeinu had taught ever since Matan Torah, and they put it into a systematic form that people could learn thereafter. Ela matik and zeh. So according to this Yesh Omrim, what is Rabbi Akiva's special contribution? Klolim upratim, that he explained the generalities and the specifics in the Torah, all the play, in other words, to put the Torah into general categories and then be able to do specifics within those categories, and that way it becomes easier to learn Torah Shebaal Peh and to memorize it. So the point is, again, the Gemara is bringing this over here because we mentioned the great people of the Beis Hamikdash, so therefore we're mentioning the great Rabbi Akiva and the great Anshei Knesset HaGdolah and what they accomplished for us Jewish people. So the Gemara continues in that vein. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Ksiv, you have a pasuk that describes an earlier group of Chachamim. The pasuk describes among the descendants of Yehuda, it mentions the families of Sofrim, the ones who dwelt, the ones who lived in or with Yabetz. Now, the simple meaning, Mephoshim explained on the pasuk, is Yabetz is the name of a place. However, later on in Divrei Yomim, we have Yabetz mentioned as a person, and the Gemara identifies him with Asniyob and Knaz. So the Gemara, the Bavli and Tmura, explains that these Mishpachos Sofrim, Yoshve Yabetz, were the descendants of Yisrael. Yisrael became a ger, his descendants after him were gerim as well, and they went to learn Torah by Yabetz, otherwise known as Sneob and Knaz, and they became tremendous Talmid Chachamim. The Gemara in Tzmura gives the detail also, they were given a very fertile area in Eretz Yisrael, the area around Yericho, but they realized they don't have a Rebbe over there. Meanwhile, Yabetz, or Sneel, was living in the south of Eretz Yisrael, in the city of Arad. Even now, you go there and the place is half desert, and he's living there as a Rebbe without Talmidim. Meanwhile, these descendants of Yisrael are living in Yericho as Talmidim without a Rebbe. So they voluntarily left their beautiful, fertile area by Yericho and went to Arad to learn Torah by Yabetz / Osniel. And for that Mesiras Nefesh, for Torah, they became enormous Talmid Chachamim. And so why are they called Matamad Lamas Sofrim? So why are these Chachamim of those generations called Sofrim? On the face of it, Sofrim just means scribes. So what's the big deal? They knew how to write. Any Yid in those times knew how to write. An interesting thing that's brought in that connection is you have a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim that describes how Gideon, after he defeated the armies of Midian, he goes. Meanwhile, on the way, he had gone to the city of Sukkos and asked the Jews there for food for his army, and they made fun of him and they told him, "It's one thing if you already defeated the Midianim, you haven't yet. We're not going to bother helping you." So now, when he comes back, he's out to teach them a lesson. So the Pasuk describes he grabbed a hold of a boy off the street there in the city of Sukkos, and he had the boy write down for him the names of all the leading citizens of Sukkos, and then Gideon went and punished them. So you see that the stam boy off the street, a random boy Gideon could expect, is going to know how to write a whole list like that. Mashenkin, in the Goyish nations of those times, it was only like, only if you're training to be a priest or a government minister or something would you b'chlal learn to write. Anyway, so what's the chiddush that these guys were sofrim? So Ella Sha'osu Satura Spiros means the Chachamim of those early generations put the Torah into a systematic order by giving numbers to things. So this way, for example, without a number, you might easily miss out one or another detail. When you have a number, for example, one of the examples over here is going to be Lamed Tes Melachos, then you know if you start enumerating them and you find you've gotten only 38, then you know you're missing one and you go and try to remember what it is. So for example, Hey Lo Yitrei Mutruma. For example, the first Mishnah, Masechta Trumas, five people are not allowed to, if they give Truma, then it's ineffective. A Chera, Shoit, a Cotton, and some others. Hey Dvarim Chayavim Bechala. Or for example, there are five kinds of grain that are Chayavim Chala. Tesvav Noshim Poitras Tzoresehen. We have at the beginning of Yevamos 15 women that pater their Tzores from Yibum. We have a situation over there where a man passed away and he's married to a woman who's a close relative of his surviving brother, as well as to another woman. So the din is the woman who's a relative is Potter from Chalitza or Yibum. Say, for example, simple example is you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is married to Shimon's daughter. So now, if Reuven dies childless, Shimon obviously is not going to do Yibum with his own daughter. He's Potter from Chalitza. She's Potter from Chalitza as well. She can marry anybody she wants. And if in addition to the daughter, Reuven was also married to another unrelated woman, then she's also Potter from Chalitza or Yibum. And so forth. And the Mishnah lists 15 such cases. Another example, Lamed Vov Krisus Batorda. You have 36 Averis that a person does that would make him Chayiv Karis. Yud Gimel Dvarim Nemru B'Nivlas Oif Tahar. Or for example, there are 13 dinim that apply to the carcass of a dead kosher bird, meaning a dead animal is metame, you know, kazayis of it is metame if a person touches or carries it, but a bird generally not, with one exception: if a person swallows a kazayis of such a dead bird, then he becomes tame. So you have that, and you have a number of other dinim that uniquely apply to the carcass of a kosher bird, which don't apply to a non-kosher bird, and so the Mishnah lists them all out. So again, if we didn't have a number over there, we'd start listing them out for ourselves, and we'd miss out some of them. So by having a number, it helps us remember all of them. Another example, our Ba Ovis Nezikin. You have four major categories of Nezikin. And for example, by the Malachas of Shabbos, 40 minus 1, again, by having a number, it helps us be able to systematize us in memory and remember all of it. Why it gives so many examples? So Tiklan Chadatin on the Yerushalmi explains he wanted to give an example, Rav Abahu wanted to give an example from each one of the six Dorim of Mishnayos. So we have Truma and Chala come from Zroim. Tesvav Noshim is from Seder Noshim, from Yevamos. Lamedvav Krisus Batoda is from Masechta Krisus, which is in Seder Kodshim. Nivlas Oif Tahar, Yud Gimel Dvarim, and Nivlas Oif Tahar is the beginning of Masechta Taharis, and Seder Taharis. Arba Avos Nezikin is in Seder Nezikin, and Avos Malachas, Avoyim Chasen Achas, is in Seder Moyed. So they're out of order of the Sedarim and Mishnayos as we have them, but we do have examples from all six Sedarim where they systematize things like that and put things with a Seder and with a number, and that helps us remember them. So we're saying that was the work of the early Chachamim of that generation, of Osniel's Talmidim and the ones after them, and that's why they're called Sofrim. Similarly, Omer of Acha or Rabbi Eliezer, Ksiv. Similarly, you have another person in Tanakh who's also described as a Sofer. Ksiv, Ezra HaKoyen HaSofer, Sofer for Gomer. So you have Ezra HaSofer, when he's first introduced in the Psukim, in Sefer Ezra, he's referred to as Vahu Sofer Mohir B'Torah Hashem, which literally means he was a very quick scribe in the Torah of Hashem. So again, in the simple sense, it just means that he was a scribe. He knew how to write Sifrei Torah. But then the Posek quotes at great length a letter that Ezra was given by the king of that time, King Daryavish, otherwise known as Artaxasta, when he's going to be heading to Eretz Yisrael. The way it describes in the Psukim, so you have like this. We learned in Masechta Megillah, you have Daryava and Kodesh. Kodesh had given permission to rebuild the Bais Hamikdash. Then that permission was rescinded because the Kusim mastered on them and claimed that they're trying to rebuild Yerushalayim and revolt. So the building was suspended for 18 years. Finally, they started rebuilding again, and shortly afterwards, Daryavash gave permission. After the building of the Bais Hamikdash was complete, then Ezra left Babel together with a contingent of a few thousand Jews to help strengthen the Jewish community over there. So before he left, the Psukim describe in Sefer Ezra how he got a letter from King Artaxerxes. The Pasuk calls him Artaxerxes, which was a title for the king of Babel, for the king of Persia. It was also known as Daryavash. Anyway, the letter outlines what Ezra's rights are as the leader of the Jewish people, that he has the right to enforce halacha as the law of the land, and many other details. So when the pasuk introduces the letter, the caption of the letter is, it's written Ezra haKoyen haSofer. It's written to Ezra the Koyen, the Sofer, and the pasuk continues Sofer Divrei Mitzvah Hashem v'Chok of Yisrael, the Sofer of the words of the laws of Hashem for the Jewish people. So why the word Sofer twice? Sofer. So why does it repeat the word sofer? Ela kashem shoy sofer b'divrei Torah, because it teaches us just as much as Ezra counted in the words of Torah, meaning to count the exact number of letters to know, we have to know how many letters there are in the Torah. First of all, to write Sifrei Torah accurately, but second of all, also because there are deep secrets of Torah in the deep names of Hashem and everything in every letter of the Torah. So therefore, it's important to know the exact number. And also, Kachaya Sofer B'Divrei Chachamim. So also, he counted and enumerated among all the words in the Chacham, among all the words of the Chachamim, to know how many halachos there are and all the details of them. So that's why the pasuk repeats the word Sofer on him. Not just he was a Sofer as a scribe, but he was a Sofer as a counter, both of Torah Shebichsav and of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Gemara continues. Reb Chagai b'shem Reb Shmuel bar Nachman. Here, let's give an example to give you an idea of the caliber of the earlier Chachamim versus us later Chachamim who are learning Torah. Harishonim, the earlier generations, they did so much preparatory work, as we just said. They put the whole Torah into numbers and they made it and they systematized it and made it so easy for us on the face of it, so easy for us to learn. Think of it in terms of preparing bread. Choshu, they plowed. Vizoru, and they planted. Nikshu, they pulled out the weeds. Kishu, they cut down the weeds or they prune the plants. V'odru, and they hoed around the plants to give air to the roots. V'kotsru, and they harvested. V'imru, and they bundled the grain together. Most of these, of course, are malachos of Shabbos as well. V'doshu, and they threshed. V'zoru, and they winnowed. Uberu, and they picked out all the dirt and everything that gets mixed in. V'tochnu, and they ground it up. V'hukidu, and sifted the flour. V'loshu, and kneaded the dough. V'kotfu, and they even basted the dough, like you baste it with water or egg or whatever. V'ofu, and they baked it. So they did all the preparatory work to make the Torah so easy for us to understand. V'onu ein lono peh lechol, and here we don't even have a mouth to eat. So we don't even put an effort into eating what they put all ready for us. A different girsa, which you find in the printed Yerushalmi, is Ein Lanu Malach, or we don't have what to eat, meaning, in other words, as much as they prepared for us, we still find as though it's inedible to us, as though like we can't understand it. And again, either way, the point is, in other words, because we don't apply ourselves enough. Reb Abba b'Moino Zmina b'Shem Reb Ze'era. Here's another way of understanding it. In Havun Admoin Malachim, if the earlier generations were like Malachim, Anan B'nei Inish, then we're no more than regular people. The In Havun B'nei Inish, and if those earlier generations were people, Anan Chamorin, then we're no better than donkeys. HaKosev has a long explanation over here. He says it's very difficult to understand. We're going to say that the Uliyu Chachamim might have only been like people, etc. And he has a long, long explanation. And the gist of it, he says, is we're talking about in terms of here, the Gemara is going to give an example as far as how Hashem saves tzaddikim from eating something that's usur. So we're saying that they were like malachim, or they were like people in that Hashem gives them special help as far as that kind of thing. Whereas we're on a lower level and we don't necessarily have that special help from Hashem. And Tiklan Chadatin on the Yerushalmi also gives another point about it. He says, you know, a person has within him, a person is, after all, in a sense, as we learned in Chagiga, half animal, half malach. We learned in Chagiga that a person in three ways is like an animal and in three ways like a malach. So which one does a person make more powerful within himself? If the earlier generations, if we can say the reason why they were able to learn Torah so thoroughly is because they had the malach component of their in them was stronger, then we can at least say we're like people, we're allowing them to be equally balanced. But if we say that they were like people, they were all, they themselves were equally balanced, and yet they accomplished so much in Torah, then we would have to say about ourselves that we're no better than donkeys. We're allowing our chumrius to overpower our ruchnis. We're not even like the donkey. When we say we're like donkeys, not even like the donkey of Pinchas ben Yair, one time robbers stole it, and it was by them for 3 days, and the rest of the story is in the next piece on Amud Beis. So it continues. We find by Eliezer when he's bringing Avraham's camels to Choron to find Rivka for Yitzchak. So the pasuk says, "Vayifata hagmalim." He unloosed the camels. So what does that mean? Hitters mameim. It means he took off the muzzles on them. Up until that point, they were muzzled, so they don't eat from other people's fields. So the Gemara asks, Rav Huna, Rav Yumi, Yeshol, Rav Chia Barab, Haloi Hoyu Gmalav Shal Avraham Doimin Lachamoroi Shor Rav Pinchas Ben Yair? Why? Weren't Avraham's camels at least on the level of the donkey of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, which did not eat something which is also, as the Gemara goes on to tell the story over here now? Now, Eitz Yosef points out that the Rav Chia Barab did not answer them, because after all, fine, it may be true that they are on that level, but nevertheless, in Soimchen al Nes. So therefore, Avraham has a response, especially when Shriya Hazeka, especially they're passing all the time near people's fields, and it's very likely an animal is going to go eat. So therefore, Avraham and Eliezer have to take the extra step of muzzling the camels, even though they could have, in theory, relied on the point that, yes, their camels are, that Avraham's camels are on the level of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey. Anyway, the story of what happened with Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey, Chamauti did a Pinchas Ben Yair Nasvur Listoi, one time robbers stole his donkey, Avdus Gabun Tlosa Yoimin, it was by them in their cave for 3 days, Voloi Tama Klum, and it wouldn't eat anything. Because, as we're going to see from the continuation of the Gemara, the donkey instinctively wouldn't eat anything that was osur. So therefore, so first of all, what the robbers are going to be feeding the donkey is not necessarily Maisir. They're robbers. They're not going to be careful with the dinim of Maisiris. And second of all, it's stolen. So therefore, so the donkey instinctively wouldn't eat. Omrin, so the robbers said to themselves, Soifa Maisa, look, if it doesn't eat, then soon it's going to die. V'tisri ma'auta alon. And the cave is going to be stunk up because of it. Nimsir olaribona, so we may as well return it to its owner. We're not going to get anything out of it anyway. So Shochua, so they let the donkey go, for Olas Bevesa Demara, and it made its way back to the Pinchas Ben Yair's house, to its master's house. Given to Olas, when it came in front of the house, Nahaka, it started braying as donkeys do. Vahakam Kola, and Rab Pinchas recognized its voice. Omar, he says to the people of his household, Pishula Oisahania, open up the door for that poor creature, Viahavula the Techel, and give it something to eat. De Isla Tlosa Yemen, like Thomas Midi, because it's already 3 days, it hasn't eaten anything, because he knew it had been stolen, and he knew that whatever the robbers were going to feed it wouldn't have been something that it would eat. Yahavin lost Sa'urin, so they offered the donkey barley, Loi Ta'amtu, and it wouldn't eat it. Amrilei, Rebbe, Yavin lost the urn of light to Imtun. So they told Pinchas Ben Yair, that we gave it barley, and it doesn't want to eat. Omelahoin, so he asked them, Tikantua, did you fix it up? Now, fix it up can mean, did you remove the psoilus, whatever, the rocks and dirt that might get mixed into it? Because even not Rebbe Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey, even regular donkeys we find in a different Gemara are very finicky eaters. So that can be one way. The other way of understanding, to kantua, usually in shas, to be masakin, means, for example, you mean you have food that's tevel, and to take out truma and mice from it. Omrun le'ein, so they said yes. He asks them, a piktun d'mai, did you take out the appropriate maestros for d'mai? Now, if we say that tekintun means did you take out truma and mice, then there'd be no room, really, to ask, did you also take out d'mai? So therefore, Hakosev prefers to say that Takintun means did you fix it up, push it as far as removing the rocks and dirt and whatever that would be mixed into it. Anyway, Omrulai, so they said, what do you mean? What do you mean to take Meiser? Loiken Alfan Rebbe, didn't you, Rebbe, yourself teach us how the Keach Lazera, if a person buys grain to plant, Vila Behema, or to feed to a Behema, the Kemach L'Ur, so he buys flour to use as part of the tanning process for leather, the Shemen Laner, or oil for a lamp, the Shemen Losufboy, or oil to smear on his skin, a Losufboy is a Kalim, or oil to smear on Kalim, if he wants to smear it on his skin, it would be Chayev in Meiser, but if he wants to smear it on Kalim, then it's Potter. Turim in Admai, then all of those are potter from Dmai. So we shouldn't have to meiser it. Omulahoin, so Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair says, Ma Navid Lov, he machmer al gaba. Fine, but what can we do? The donkey wants to be machmer on herself, so therefore, so you have no choice but to give it food that's meiser, because instinctively, as the Gemara mentions, as the Bavli mentions in a few places, even behemtan shol tzaddikim, even the animals of tzaddikim, like Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, Hashem won't allow a takola to come about through them that they should eat something that's osir. Actually, the Gemara in the Bavli in Cholin brings this story as well, and it says a little differently that it turned out that grain that they were offering the donkey, they had originally bought to feed to a person. Then they decided to feed it to the donkey, and the din is in that case, it is chayiv and maaser. So it's not the donkey being machmer on itself, like the Yerushalmi is saying over here, but rather than the ikra din, it wouldn't be, well, not a donkey, obviously, it's not chayiv and ikra din, but in other words, the food would actually... No, but in other words, the point is that the food would actually be considered tevel al pi halacha, and therefore the donkey was going to be machmer on itself, as in behemtan shel tzaddikim, and not eat it because it was tevel. All right, yom yom Mashiach Gola. Chazal tell us, as we know, b'schar noshim tzidkonius, that we're in that generation, the Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim. The same thing is going to be as far as the Geulah Asida. That will be in the schar of the noshim tzidkonius, Shabbat Yisadur. Tonight is Vav Tishrei, is an appropriate time to talk about that. In fact, the Maila of Neshe Yisro, we see it not just in the fact that they bring the Geula, but in the Geula itself, even more Be'ikr in the Geula itself, because it's explained in various places in Kabbalah and Chassidus and Torah Ur and in other places that La'osid Lavoi, we're going to see more revealed openly the Maila of Sfiras HaMalchus. Nowadays, we look at Malchus as the Makabel, as the lower one below Zah, below everything else. But we're going to see then how its source is higher than all the other spheres, higher than the Mashpia, higher than the man, the Kevet, the Sevev Gover, and Eshes Chai Lakeres Baifim. Continuing with halachos of aseres simei tshuva, a person should be doing aseres simei tshuva, a person should take on themselves chumras that he might not do the rest of the year, because we're asking Hashem to be noyig with us with midas chassidus, so therefore we doing aseres simei tshuva should also be acting with a midas chassidus. One example is a person during the rest of the year eats pasakum, which there are heterim for eating pas palter, where it's baked by a commercial goyish baker. But during aseres simei tshuva, at least a person should be more nizer in that and eat only pas yisrael. And there are other examples as well.